Welcome everyone to episode 214 of the Reds Unrestricted podcast. I'm your host David Comerford and I'm joined by Mark Baker to discuss Mohamed Salah's situation at Liverpool.
This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
So, like I said in the intro today, our focus is going to be on Mohamed Salah, who is probably in a more uncertain, more tense situation than we've seen at any stage, really, in his Liverpool career. Some very interesting and significant reports coming out on that today, which we'll obviously get into as well from some very trustworthy sources. But before we deal with all of that, we will just have a quick look back at the 2-2 draw with West Ham last weekend. Obviously, kind of hard to establish the importance of Liverpool games right now. I mean, they've effectively got top four in the bag after Spurs lost to Arsenal. The title is obviously gone. So it is just kind of winding down now, the Jurgen Klopp tenure. But we will just sort of briefly reflect on it. I mean, Mark, what did you sort of take from the game? Frustrating man for Liverpool to fight the way back into the lead, but then obviously concede that equaliser.
Yeah. It was a really disappointing game, Dave, and a disappointing sort of end to the season for Liverpool. A bit of a damn squib, to be perfectly honest with you. I think, obviously, the last two games against Everton and against West Ham, you probably looked at a team who know or are aware that they've probably missed their opportunity. I think there's been a lot of talk about sort of how Klopp's decision to inform Liverpool that he was leaving the club earlier in the season has affected the side. But I really believe that's absolute nonsense in terms of when you think about... I think it's really easy to sort of break down Liverpool's season, if you like, and sort of what's gone wrong in the last... It's 10 games, really, Dave, isn't it? 10 or so games. If you'd asked everyone beforehand, before these last 10 games started, their perception of Liverpool's season, everyone would be having a totally different opinion on it. They'd have a totally different opinion on most of the players, overall performances, the decision for Klopp to announce he was leaving, etc., etc. And I do believe that, let's take the Crystal Palace game, for example. Liverpool lost the game against Crystal Palace. And, you know, people were talking about terrible performance, players have let the manager down. It was no different to a lot of the performances throughout the season, really. I mean, the only difference was that in the last 10 games, Liverpool in both penalty areas have not performed. So Liverpool have always given opportunities to the opposition for 15, 20-minute spells or small chunks in games or three or four opportunities in which the opposition have a really good chance to score. Previously in the season, chances weren't being taken. Liverpool were never within sort of a distance of the results. They never allowed themselves really to get two goals behind. And eventually, because of the firepower and the volume of chances they were creating, that they just basically bulldozed teams down into submission and recovered the results, even though they went behind in the vast majority of games. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Dave, it's something like 16 Premier League games they've been behind in this season. But on the flip side of that, Liverpool have also, I think, accumulated something like 70 more shots on the opposition goal than anyone in Europe. So the sheer volume, even though that Liverpool never had the most clinical finishes in the final phase, meant that the opportunities in the end, like I mentioned before, they were just bulldozing the teams into submission. And then fortunate in the sense that them opportunities that they were given the opposition weren't being taken earlier in the season. And even if they were, they had that firepower to be able to come back. But over the last 10 games, Liverpool have still been giving up the same chances, but the opposition have been putting more in the back of the net in Liverpool's penalty area. And then at the other end, unfortunately, Liverpool's form in the final third, whether it be the forwards, the whole squad in terms of finishing, has been nowhere near the level. But if you actually look at the performances, I think there's a lot of sort of similarities in the performances they're producing earlier in the season. The only difference is that the outcome's not been there in both boxes. I mean, you can even look into, I think it was Brighton and Sheffield United just before the Crystal Palace game. Not much different than the Crystal Palace fixture, like we talked about. It really wasn't. The only difference was that Liverpool didn't have the comeback because they couldn't score the opportunities they had. So in the last 10 games, that's been the sort of common feature. But I think you can almost box the Everton game and West Ham game into sort of a different category where, actually, in the Everton game, again, of course, and the West Ham game, of course, Liverpool missed opportunities. But you could sense that there was a percentage maybe not there with the team. And it only takes a couple of percent because the feeling that probably Liverpool had lost that momentum, lost them things they still had to achieve this season. And that's why I mentioned about the Klopp decision, because it frustrated me a bit listening to certain observations this week talking about he shouldn't have announced his decision, this, that or the other. In the modern world, in modern society and in modern football, there was no option but for Jurgen Klopp to announce his decision to leave Liverpool. I mean, let's take away the fact that it would probably have been leaked anyway. I mean, we don't know the answers to that, but there's pretty much, you know, assurances that he managed to keep it quiet for a period of time after he told the club. But the reality was it was probably likely to have been coming out. But even if it wasn't, and Liverpool had still managed to keep it quiet and Klopp had, Liverpool needed to move on with their sourcing of a new manager, you know, talking to intermediates, talking to whoever they needed to over these coming months. And that couldn't have happened if Jurgen Klopp all of a sudden decided at the end of the season that he was just going to tell Liverpool he was going to leave. That wouldn't have been the right position to leave the club in, especially when the transfer market in terms of the sort of manager merry-go-round was always likely to be quite competitive this year. So these ideas that, you know, look what happened to Sir Alex Ferguson and that should have been something he should have learned from, you know, it shouldn't have been the case that Klopp shouldn't have announced it. In the modern world, for me, there was absolutely no choice but for that to happen, whether it was leaked or not. But the only thing is, when you're on sort of a continuation of momentum and you've still got something to work towards, like the Liverpool squad did, then none of that would really play a factor because all the players primarily are focused on achieving their objectives and their aims for the season. You know, football's a very sort of individualistic, selfish sport. And as much as they'd want to do it for the manager, they'd want to do it for their own careers. The minute that was sort of taken away in these competitions, whether it be the Europa League and then obviously the Premier League, which it felt that it was unattainable at that point, that's when them percentages can slightly drop, I suspect. Not just if the manager was going, but a little bit, maybe more likely if that was the case that, you know, players begin to see the end of the road and what comes next, really. So I think that's sort of my summary of it in terms of the West Ham game and just in general, really, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, to start with the Klopp stuff, I mean, I've said a couple of times, including immediately after the announcements happened, that I was concerned that the emotions could start running too high. And I do think that the stakes have been raised to a point where maybe the players have struggled to cope with that a little bit. So I wouldn't say it's like, it's definitely not been a help to Liverpool. And I do think it might have made their lives a little bit more difficult in a way. Having said all of that, I completely agree with you, Mark, that it is just unfortunately something that we had to accept because if you take it this way, so Jurgen Klopp, you know, tells FSG that he wants to leave, even if it's just, you know, the inner circle there. Let's naively assume that they can sort of keep that under wraps, you know, among themselves. Then you can't expect Liverpool to basically go till the very end of the season without, you know, laying any groundwork for new manager. I think it's a good point you make in terms of a competitive environment. You know, that Bayern, for example, are looking for a manager. They've, you know, been interested in some of the candidates with Liverpool. There could still be a chance that Man United are looking for a manager at the end of the season. That might hinge, for example, what happens in the FA Cup final. And a few other clubs as well, you know, Barcelona are looking for, I think it might be for 2025 now. Not exactly sure what's happening with that, but again, they're a player in it and there's a couple of other teams as well. So you've got to kind of basically put the feelers out there. And then it's inevitable once you do that an agent or the manager themselves or someone like that is going to say, you know, I've just been approached about the Liverpool job. And then it's like, then it leaks from there. And then if that happens, that for me is a lot more damaging in terms of the players start thinking to themselves, well, hang on, why didn't Klopp tell us? Why are we finding out sort of through a report? And that's probably going to do more damage to Liverpool's season to Jurgen Klopp's reputation and to things like that. So when he made the decision to leave, he just had to announce it really. And he probably left it until the last possible moment to do that realistically. So that's not a narrative I'm paying too much attention to in terms of could anything have been done differently? Because I think from the moment that he decided he was going, it couldn't essentially. In terms of Liverpool and their season and the point you make about what's been different recently, I think I sort of posed the question on Twitter a few weeks ago being like, how many Liverpool wins can you look at this season and say they've been truly convincing for two halves of football. And I mean, you know, just off the top of my head, I mean, even the ones where they've run up some big score lines, like when they beat Bournemouth 3-1 or Brentford, I think they won 3-0. Had to come from behind in the first one. Brentford, they were, you know, borderline outplayed for stretches of that game. So you think of games, you know, the 3-0 against Aston Villa. It was a win against Nottingham Forest, and now Liverpool were fairly impressive. And just a few, you know, dotted round season, the 4-1 against Chelsea, for example. That was probably Liverpool's best performance of the whole season. But then you have a lot of games where they've had to come from behind, like Luton at home where it's 4-1, Brentford away where it's 4-1. Games against the teams towards the bottom of the table, they've had to work hard. So really, you end up getting into a situation where once you run through all the games, you get to about five, really, that you can't dispute, a few more that are debatable. But that in over the course of a full season for a team who wants to win the league, you know, as we've kind of alluded to a few times, is pretty much unsustainable and shows that bottom line Liverpool weren't and aren't good enough to win the Premier League this season. So I think that is a pretty fair way of looking at it in terms of what changed recently. Well, maybe it was just that Liverpool's unsustainable run kind of inevitably ran out on them in the end. Obviously, that's not the only reason, but that's part of it. So that's sort of that kind of part of the discussion dealt with then. I mean, obviously, the big story from the game, and probably bigger than the result itself as well, because it didn't feel like a particularly high-stakes fixture on its own, was this spat between Salah and Klopp on the touchline. Some people saying that there's not really anything to it. Other people saying that it's really serious. According to James Pearce, it basically stemmed from the fact that Salah was annoyed that he'd been left on the bench for so long before he actually came on in the game. Mark, what was your take on the actual incident itself and sort of the fallout from it, if you like?
Yeah, I've watched the video, Dave. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's sort of from a crowd view. And you can quite clearly see the argument starts when he, as you know, when sort of Klopp's ready in the substitutes, shake of the hands, big hug, that kind of thing. And he was reticent to do that, Salah. So Gomez, Darwin Nunes all followed suit. And he sort of like held his hand out as if, you know, a half-hearted gesture, basically, to just tap Klopp's hand. And at that point, that's when you can see Klopp sort of go a different way about it, which you can imagine how it's played out. I don't think it's sort of out of the realms to sort of surmise what's gone on. He's obviously been left out the side. He's obviously been in a sulk before the game. You know, obviously been a fantastic player for Liverpool. Liverpool's one of Liverpool's greatest ever players. Has come to the game, been left out. He's obviously not been in the right frame of mind in terms of, you know, whether it be the warm-up or whatever it may be. There's an atmosphere there. And then obviously when he's being brought on, like I say, he's been tensitive to acknowledge the man. That tension's probably just simmered over between the two. You can actively see Klopp. I think he saw him as if to say, listen, you can sit back down on the bench. You can see his hand gestures moving towards that. And at that point, it just sort of plays out in public, which is not what you'd want. I mean, listen, this happens probably all the time at football clubs, and it's, you know, disagreements, and it happens at any level of football, really, I suppose. But the fact that I think the situation got on top of both individuals in the sense that Liverpool have pretty much lost the league at this point. There's nothing to play for. There's huge disappointments. Salah feels he should be playing the games. Klopp probably feels he hasn't produced what he needs to. There's tension there, and obviously it's boiled over in coming out in the public. And it was a sad end, really, to two individuals who've had such massive success with each other and been so important for each other as well, Dave, in the sense of that. And yeah, it was just a poor look all round. And to be honest, probably just summarised how much of I'd use the term nightmare the last few weeks have been, really, the last 10 games. I mean, if you'd have pretty much said to anyone what's the worst sorts of things that could possibly happen to Liverpool, I think they've probably played out in front of everyone's face, really. And I think that was the culmination of everything, really, I suppose.
Yeah, it's been absolutely brutal as a stretch. It's sort of similar emotions, except maybe not as heightened as kind of that back end of the 21-22 season. Liverpool obviously had the way the final day of the season panned out and then losing the Champions League final. I mean, obviously they didn't get that close to that kind of glory this year, but just kind of, it's almost been that on a sustained period in a way. So I think people are now sort of very much looking forward to the end of the season, having previously obviously been dreading it because of Klopp going. So we talk about Salah being annoyed that he's been a substitute and left on the bench for a while. He had a run between Sparta Prague home and Brighton home where he scored in three straight games. In the eight matches since then, he hasn't scored from open play. He hasn't provided an assist. And he's been left on the bench away to Fulham and away to West Ham now. So that's obviously two of Liverpool's last three Premier League games. This is probably the toughest stretch of his career, form-wise. He's obviously had dips before, but I think even in those cases, it wasn't that he was getting dropped from the lineup, as we've seen now. Do you think there's an explanation for this, Mark, that we can kind of pick out from the outside? I mean, someone I've said a couple of times is I just don't know if he's quite right physically, given the way his season's panned out with getting injured, coming back too early, getting injured again. And maybe that's just kind of taking a toll on him, because that kind of explanation, again, it's pure sort of speculative, but it sort of points to how confusing it is to see Salah struggle as much as he has done in recent times. And that's why I'm sort of reaching for a fitness-related issue, because footballing-wise, I'm struggling to kind of put my finger on it, really.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we know the player's been so durable. He's hardly been missed any games playing for Liverpool, Dave, has he? Never mind, you know, coming back from an injury. And I suppose that's before his injury, he was playing well. He was in good rhythm. He was contributing massively to Liverpool again. He had one of the first or longest delays of his career, and he's been obviously nowhere near the level since he came back. But I do find it really difficult to judge some of the Liverpool performances over these last 10 games as individuals, though, because barring Van Dijk, and I would say without having the end product, Luis Diaz, I struggle to find many of the players who've actually played well during that period. So I think the fact that he is coming back from injury, he is having to sort of find that sort of rhythm in his game again, which is unusual for him to have to do. But also, the rest of the team are underperforming as well. And he is sort of a part of that collective, if you like. So if it was him standing out in a team that had been previously playing fantastically, but it's just been the perfect storm of so many players. Like I say, I've mentioned probably two players. I could probably fit Alexis McAllister in there as well. He's had one or two games where maybe he's dropped off a little bit in the last 10, but I'd probably add him into the mix. But pretty much every other member of the squad, for me, has been so below par. So when I'm sort of trying to judge him in isolation and talk about sort of what has been the issue, why do you feel he's dropped off? I suppose it's hard to do, because I can't make a case that why all the Liverpool players have dropped off, you know, players who 10 games ago we'd have had a totally different opinion about. And then all of a sudden, you know, we're looking at it totally differently now. I think one thing I would say is if we were to sort of judge a player's potential for next season or current level based on the last 10 games, I think you'd be selling half the squad, which we know is not a realistic thing, or, you know, you've got to judge them over a much longer period. So I certainly wouldn't feel that it's any sort of demise. Of course, he's not the player that he was 5 years ago. Just from a physical standpoint, he's had to adapt his game, and he's done that, becoming more creative, becoming one of the best creators within the Premier League, having different facets to his game in terms of being able to pick out passes and, you know, drop deeper and influence the play. So although he will never be as athletic and maybe the 1v1 threat that he was previously, and maybe the player who's looking to exploit that space in behind as much, I feel that he's still got plenty to offer Liverpool. And, you know, his form as well as others are just unexplainable in the last 10 games. I really struggle to put my finger on such a break. In fact, David, I don't know what you think, but I think it'd be like a scientific study to find out what's happened to Liverpool over this last 10 games. I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a team who've been in such an advantageous position and seen basically all of their players drop off collectively. Because you made a great point before about Jurgen Klopp and the fact that we don't believe that it's been a consequence of him informing the club and obviously letting them know that he's going to be leaving. But one great point you meant was it probably changed the expectations for the season from building towards something to all of a sudden, right, this is the culmination. What can we achieve? When the reality was, the numbers were telling you and the eyesight was telling you that Liverpool weren't as good a side as Manchester City and Arsenal. They weren't as, you know, they didn't have they had too many variables in the game compared to the other sides. But I think, obviously, from that, Liverpool got themselves into such a great position, and it almost feels, it's all right to say, well, they're not as good as them two sides, but it's almost self-inflicted what's happened to them in the last 10 games. So it's hard to accept then, because when you get yourself into that position to combust in so many ways and cost yourself so many games in a self-inflicted manner, it is hard to stomach. And he's been a collective part of that at the attacking end, but also Liverpool have suffered at the other end as well. So just a total drop-off from all involved.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because obviously we're sat here today talking about Salah, and I suppose the fact that it is so hard to explain is almost why we're discussing it, because it is something that's kind of slightly boggled the mind of a lot of Liverpool fans. But at the same time, like you alluded to, you know, it's by no means to suggest that he is kind of the problem by any means. I mean, we've got, like you say, basically a collective drop-off across the board in almost every sort of facet of the game at the moment. So it's just obviously with Salah, it's more pronounced because he has been so incredibly consistent over his time at Liverpool. I mean, I think I remember looking at it for an article not that long ago, and you can sort of count the amount of times he's had a drought longer than sort of four or five games on one hand over his career. And I know obviously he scored a couple recently, but they have been penalties, which is obviously not something that should, you know, not something too much stock should be placed in, I don't think. So just to finish off then, I mean, looking forward for Salah, I mean, he's going to be one of these kind of Liverpool style, which has to seemingly adjust to what life's like without Jurgen Klopp. We had David Ornstein, who's obviously, I mean, we were talking about journalists before, who would have caught wind of Klopp. I think he's obviously one of those where it's hard for something like that to play out when a journalist of that kind of experience and kind of profile not to find out about stuff like this. He's said today that Liverpool are expecting Salah to stay next season. There's been obviously speculation that he's going to leave, but Salah's not given any indication that he wants to leave. Not too much talk within the actual report about Salah signing a new deal. Obviously, he's coming into the last year of his contract. And I'm hesitant to kind of to do this in a way, Mark, because, you know, he's one of the best football players of all time. But to sort of play devil's advocate, I mean, you've got Michael Edwards coming in. You've got Liverpool seemingly being run now very much like sort of a data-driven football club and kind of a hard-headed pragmatist view of things rather than a sentimental one, because the reins are going to be passed over to Edwards and his team. Is it kind of surprising in your eyes that there isn't maybe an openness from the club to maybe cash in on Salah now while they still can? Because we don't know if there is going to be an agreement contract-wise, because obviously you've got these maybe alarm bells that are ringing on the pitch at the moment. You've got how much he would earn by signing a new deal. Obviously, we know that he's getting to sort of an advanced stage of his career. I mean, how do you find that balance between keeping a player who's a proven superstar and not kind of allowing the past to govern the future?
Yeah, no, it's a great point, Dave. And it's difficult to assess when you're not part of the club and you don't see the player on a day-to-day basis. I suppose if you take away the last 10 games, for example, his numbers creatively and still being able to put the ball in the back of the net show him as one of the elite players within the Premier League still. So I think, you know, if we take these 10 games in isolation and look at the bigger picture, you'd still think that he's a massive sort of asset to Liverpool. I suppose also I've seen the reports today as well that have sort of come out the club or been leaked by The Athletic. And I think from Liverpool's point of view as well, I mean, I have no doubt that Michael Edwards is a massive fan of Salah. There's no doubt about that. I mean, one of the great success stories of his reign, bringing him in and the data-driven approach to that allows him to be the selected choice for Liverpool in that position. And I think from, you know, when that sort of comes out today, I think one thing we've got to state is Liverpool are not going to be coming out saying they want to sell him anyway. I mean, that's not in Liverpool's best interest. Liverpool want to be in a situation where if he was to leave the football club, they generate as much money as possible. And you don't do that, obviously, by, you know, the current situation where there's a little bit of tension behind the scenes. It looks like his position could be, you know, a bit in doubt, if you like. So the club will want to project that they'll want to keep the player. And I think from, if we look at it as sort of stone cold statistics wise, as sort of an attacking tool that you can lean on, then it all points to him still being a massively valuable asset, especially because we know that, you know, Liverpool, the rest of Liverpool's sort of forward players in the forward line, there's not a great deal of assurance about what they can contribute when it really matters. Whereas with Salah, obviously, you're getting a guarantee, you know, proven in that sense. So it makes perfect sense why they'd want to keep him, especially if you've got to factor in, you know, a new manager coming to the club, your best player. It's as simple as that. Your best player, the person who contributes the most in the final phase, regardless of if he's had a slump in the last few weeks, you would massively think you want to be part of that. You want to limit the amounts of transition that could possibly affect the team, and you don't want to be taking away really, really positive tools that you'd have at your disposal. But at the same time, I think there'll be an acceptance that, although the club are projecting that, and I have no doubt that, you know, I read a report today, I don't know if you've seen it as well, Dave, that Liverpool were thinking of opening talks over sort of a new deal, which I imagine it's sort of be a one-year deal, if you like. And they've got to weigh up what's his physical condition and what are his physical numbers looking like. I think the great part about Salah is not only is he's been a player who can exploit space in behind, but he's also a player who can create from a deeper position as well. So he's not as reliant on that sort of physical ability to be able to shuffle in behind. So I think that gives another sort of string to his bow in that sense. But of course, if Liverpool were offered an astronomical sum like that came in 12 months ago in the last year of his contract, and he's not sort of showing that willingness to sort of re-engage that contract for another year, then again, that has to be something that the club has to consider, because if it gets asked to astronomical kinds of money and you're looking at giving a player away on a free transfer, then that's something that, yeah, that would have to be factored in as well. So I think what the club is sort of putting out there, there may be sort of two ways it can go, but it's in their best interest to get it out there that, you know, they would still want him to stay, which I'm sure is one of two very good options for them. If they were to pocket a massive sum, they could go and redevelop that and reinvest that in other areas. But it sounds like they feel like he's got a lot more to offer still.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, it will be a discussion that has to be had if, like you say, that offer does come in. I mean, the report today said that maybe the interest isn't as intense as it was, but we know that these things can obviously develop. I mean, we're only in April at the moment. And there's a couple of things I want to sort of raise, and just to kind of on one last note. You know, Firmino, when he left last year, was 31. Mane was 30. And I think both of those players, I mean, you could maybe draw comparisons between sort of what you'd seen from Mane in his final season and Salah this year in terms of, I mean, maybe the numbers look good, the performances don't look quite as good. It's not a perfect comparison. And then Firmino obviously going as well, the two other members of that iconic front three. You kind of allude to Salah being maybe different in the sense that he can sort of impact the game in maybe a more varied way compared to those two. I mean, with... Obviously, I mean, we saw Mane moving to a central role and he did quite well, but Liverpool still, you know, took that decision to accept the offer to move him on. Firmino kind of struggled to be that same false nine that he was in the past. Can Salah sort of once again reinvent himself and prolong his longevity that way? But just to pick up as well on another thing you said, I mean, about giving him kind of a one-year contract now, if he is to sign another deal at Liverpool, is that kind of what you see as what Liverpool will do or what Liverpool should do, if that makes sense in light of what I've just been saying about Salah's like longevity at this stage?
Yeah, I think sometimes, Dick, what we tend to do is we tend to group them three players together, Firmino, Mane and Salah. And I think, don't get me wrong, fantastic players for Liverpool. But he's always been a level above them. He's always been the better by a considerable distance. I mean, you're talking about one of the best players to ever grace the Premier League. And you know, he's another good point about maybe, especially in Mane's case, I think you could look at it before he went into that central role, and there'd been a drop off for about a good year and a half before that. We weren't talking about a sort of 10-game stretch. So I think that the level or the quality of the player and the way he is able to influence the game, like we've talked about, if Liverpool weren't to get an offer that was astronomical, it makes perfect sense to me if they felt that his physical numbers, and only the club will know that in terms of what he's producing on a day-to-day basis, suggest, as we know, such a fantastic athlete that he is. If they suggest and they believe that they can still get the absolute results out of him, maybe not the astronomical levels that we've seen that are absolute outlier in the league, but I think even before his injury, he was still right up there. So if they believe that over the next course of the next year or two, that the numbers physically are telling them that he can still be a massive part of Liverpool, then I think that they've got to try and tie him down to that 1 year deal. Otherwise, Dave, I mean, you know, to lose him for free, for me, that's not an option. It can't be an option. You can't lose a player to that value, someone you got offered the amount of money for the previous season on a free transfer. I think Liverpool have actually, over the last few years, been pretty fortunate with the money they got from Saudi Arabia, from Fabinho and Henderson, because I think, especially in Henderson's case, they made a really poor choice to keep him at the club. We've seen that sort of physical level and general performance level decline. We know that was driven by Klopp. I think this will be a lot colder in terms of how Edwards would go about it, because I don't believe he would have made that decision. I think it had a big part to play in why he eventually left the club. And I think it will be a hard, cold one, but I feel that if they aren't getting an astronomical sum, that would make perfect sense, wouldn't it? Because otherwise you can't allow him to leave for free, because I still feel he's got a massive part to contribute. But they're the ones that have got to decide that, because they'll have that information more than us, won't they?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's going to sort of define what next season looks like Liverpool is, are they going to keep sort of the crux of this squad and this core together, and the manager moves on? And then obviously it looks like, you know, Slot's going to come in. You know, I think the expectations are very different for him if he's kind of working with almost the squad that Klopp had this year, plus a few upgrades to that, compared to if he comes in and Salah goes, and then maybe one of Trent and Van Dijk go, obviously both in a similar position contract-wise, and if one or two other surprise names go as well, and then it becomes a much more wholesale rebuild. I mean, no one's expecting Liverpool to go and win the league next year either way, regardless of what happens with the players. But it's going to be interesting to see, and I think Salah's going to be one of the possible stories of the summer, but we'll obviously see. I mean, Liverpool can, like you've alluded to, Mark, kind of lock him down to another deal and obviously pretty much make that go away. But we'll see very much happens with that one. So yeah, we'll leave it there for today's podcast. Thanks, Mark, for joining me. Thanks very much, everyone, for listening. If you have enjoyed it, please give us a 5-star review or a 5-star rating. And we've got all the relevant links in our episode description, including the podcast email address and mine and Mark's Twitter usernames. We'll be back again during the week before the game against Spurs at the weekend. Looks like there might be a managerial announcements coming out of Liverpool after some of the recent progress they've made behind the scenes with kind of negotiating that deal for Slot. So if that is indeed the case, we'll obviously be offering our reaction to that. But yeah, I think that the new manager talk is obviously going to ratchet up a notch now with not too much to fight for on the pitch anymore. But yeah, thanks very much, everyone, for listening, and we'll see you next time.